All right, good morning, everybody. My name is Tom Markowitz, and I'm going to be your moderator today for the Using RSS for Marketing panel. First, I'd like to introduce the group, and I'll then just briefly introduce them, have them each talk for a couple minutes about who they are, what they do, give you a little insight to their background, and I hope you'll see why we had them on the panel here. And then we're going to jump into a lot of different topics that I think should make for a very interactive discussion. Let me start off by saying, if you do have questions at any time during the panel this morning, please just go up to one of the microphones, and you can ask your question there, and we'll take them as we go. So first, to my right, we have Greg Reinecker from NewsGator. We now have John Jantz from Duct Tape Marketing. We have Emily Chang from Idea Codes, and Bill Flitter from Fido. So first, let's start off, and Greg, if you can just give a brief introduction, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Not sure I can fill up a couple minutes, but I'll try. So I'm Greg Reinecker, founder and CTO of NewsGator. We build RSS aggregators. Some of you probably use them, like FeedDemon, NetNewsWire. We also build aggregation tools for the enterprise, like NewsGator Enterprise Server, and also for publishers, too. And examples of that is, for example, USA Today uses our tools as part of their recent big redesign that they did on their site.
I am John Jantz with Duct Tape Marketing. I'm not going to talk about me. I'm going to talk about you. I've actually built a little bit of a reputation taking new marketing tools, new technology, and trying to make them simple and maybe more importantly, practical for small business owners. And, you know, it's really easy to get very enamored with a new technology, a new marketing tool, with how it works and what the buzz is about it and how other people are using it, or maybe dismiss it offhand because of the very same things. And I think it's extremely important to look at any new technology, any new marketing tool, and just simply ask yourself, how could I apply that? How could I take the principles of how other people are using that and make my life better, make my client's life better, make the people that work here with us make their life better? Because at the end of the day, we're really just talking about sound marketing principles. If any of you came here today to get the magic bullet, I don't think we're going to give it to you. We're really going to talk about a technology that is a great integrator, that's a great enabler. But if you have a crappy marketing message, an RSS feed, it's just going to make it more convenient for people to get it.
Get your crap faster.
So what we're going to do, or at least the way I view any of these technologies, I use RSS for lead generation. I use RSS for lead nurturing. I use RSS for lead conversion. I use RSS for customer service. If any of you need to do any of that in your businesses, then you're probably in the right place.
Emily.
Thank you, John. My name's Emily Chang, and I'm co-founder and principal of Idea Codes, which is a web consultancy in San Francisco. We are kind of a full-service consultancy, and I also run eHub, which is a blog that tracks Web 2.0 startups, services, and applications. I'm a designer by trade, but also a coder and a technology strategist.
Thank you. My name is Bill Flitter. I'm the founder of Fido, and we provide RSS marketing services. So we help our clients acquire customers using feeds, distribute their content through feeds. Content could be text, video, or audio. But the whole principle behind our company is to help marketers leverage their existing RSS assets to attract prospects. And we were founded in about 2003, so been kind of early pioneers in setting the stage for RSS marketing.
Great. And then I'll just briefly introduce myself. I'm the founder and CEO of a company called EvolvePoint. We make RSS feed solutions using our FeedCraft and FeedMiner products, and I also teach strategic marketing at Virginia Tech. So I think from what you hear here, we have a good diverse group of people, and we are going to jump right into the discussion. And what I want to first talk about and pose a question to the panel is one of the things that I'm sure a lot of you in this room, you know what RSS is, right? Okay, you wouldn't be here today because we're not going to have any discussion of what the technology is. You should all know that. The question really then becomes, and this is what I want to pose to the panel, how we know the benefits, or we think we know the benefits, and we'll talk some more about that, but how do you go about explaining RSS or telling that, you know, maybe potentially to your clients? Maybe, Emily, you can start with that, working with clients. How do you kind of go about talking to them about RSS?
Well, it depends, I guess, on what type of client it is. We serve both individuals who are sort of professional bloggers as well as startups, tech startups, and kind of the Web 2.0 space who are working on web applications, as well as larger Fortune 500 companies. So across that spectrum, you know, everyone has very different needs, but the kind of cohesive joining force between all of them is that everyone wants to deliver information to their customers faster or to their audience faster. And I think that's what RSS really enables, is a direct information stream that goes right to your core audience. Whether they're aware of the technology or not, I think there's certainly ways in which to push that data and content to them, whether it's through your site, whether it's through email updates, whether it's through a direct RSS in their reader. So I think in a lot of ways, when we're trying to explain it to our clients, it's about the benefit for your users and also efficiency for your company.
John, yeah, you know, I would just jump in there, and I'll probably repeat this statement, but I don't think it matters what we call it anymore. That's what I've stopped calling it anything technical. I mean, I've stopped even talking about the B word, you know, blogs. I mean, with clients a lot of times, because it really doesn't matter what we call it. I mean, it's just, okay, what result do you want? What, you know, what would you like? More search traffic? Would you like some of the things Emily mentioned? And just, that's how I talk about it. Okay.
So
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that. I would say 2 years ago, we definitely had talked about it. And then it was like deer in the headlights. Yeah. So we really stopped talking about what RSS is and approach it from, well, what are you looking to do? We just happen to use RSS to acquire customers or drive traffic to your site. And we can do that more cost effectively by leveraging RSS. Now, they have, you know, a lot of our clients already have RSS. We don't manufacture the feeds. So they have a general sense of what it is, but they just want to know, I need to show some ROI on this. I just had our tech guys build this out. What do I do? How do I leverage it? So it's really out of our pitch. We talk about content distribution or syndication, and that seems to work a lot better than getting into RSS, because then it just opens up the Pandora's box. What is RSS? It just confuses. It's too confusing. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, now, as a kind of a lead-in to my next question then, if you're saying that you know, RSS isn't something we have to necessarily discuss, or people at least have a concept of that, let's talk about how fast RSS is moving into the mainstream. And I think that's a big question, that if you're going to use RSS for marketing, do the end users, are they taking to this technology? Do I want to spend money as a publisher on doing anything additional with RSS feeds if the adoption rate isn't there? So maybe we'll start... Greg, do you have any with the products that your company is using? What have you seen in terms of the market and adoption, and where are we, yeah, guys? I would like to hear from everybody on the panel what their experience is on the adoption rate.
You know, so our data is relative to our audience, right? We see that the growth rate's still accelerating, which is good. You know, nothing's like tapering off or anything like that. What's interesting is that we don't have data about is, you know, for example, all the people that are using IE7 or, you know, Outlook 2007 or Firefox or some other application, right? It's really the first exposure to the idea of subscribing to content for, you know, hundreds of millions of people in IE7. So, you know, I think we're really going to see the adoption of all this stuff continue to accelerate. I think the difference is going to be, though, up to now, people generally knew, oh, you know, yeah, I'm an adopter of RSS. You know, I'll check that box on this survey. And moving forward, and actually even into the past a little bit, people don't know that they're using RSS. They just know that they're getting all this stuff. So that makes it even more difficult to measure, because if you survey those people, they'll say, I have no idea what RSS is. Why are you asking me this?
Well, this will be unfair. How many people here read feeds? Well, there's your data, right? Yeah. Actually, put your hands up again for those of you who read feeds. How many also have email, read email? How many voicemail? Right? I mean, I think the thing is that well, obviously, this is a skewed audience, but I think that our clients, our prospects, are getting information in a lot of different ways, and it's simply a matter of, I don't know that I guess I care what the adoption rate is. There's simply a matter of there's a sector of our prospects that want to get information this way, and it's probably an important thing to be able to give that information in all the various ways in which they want to learn.
Well, John, but true, but this is definitely an early adopter crowd, though. Well, so I think taking a survey of this audience does not reflect.
Oh, I think this is the American population here. Is what this is, right? Absolutely. Now, the point is, though, here's a great audience that obviously is reading feeds. So, but again, the point I was really trying to make is that I think we all get information in a lot of different ways, and the trick is always to easily enable all those ways that they want to get information.
Yeah, I think it's true to what Greg was saying as well, is that right now we don't really have very good statistical data on what people are really using across the whole internet. You know, while RSS and the tech crowd were concerned with when it'll become adopted in mainstream, I think it's actually been around in mainstream for some time now. I think in 2005, major corporations like Disney and ABC were already using RSS in their internal intranets as a way to distribute information to all their employees. So in some cases, you know, our adoption of it is dependent on who we are. But in some cases, we're already using it in forms that we may not even be aware of, such as, you know, at your workplace, for example.
One of the services that we provide is a measurement of feeds and how people are interacting with those, because obviously that's information that marketers want to know. And what we were pretty excited to see last year was a huge spike in traffic from a non-tech sector. And that was in the automotive sector. And they were publishers that we were working with and marketers we were working with were the content was, you know, hobbyists of cars, you know, from all different kinds of brands. And that particular channel... We saw a 500% increase in 2006, and you know we were used to seeing those kinds of numbers in technology that were targeting early adopters. But what excited me about that is it is going more towards mainstream. It's leaning that way. Right? I'm not saying it's there yet, but that is one data point that I think is important when it breaks out of tech and goes into more of a hobbyist channel. And last year, when Google and Google Reader went live, and I guess some of the Microsoft products were really enabled, we saw a huge spike in usage of feeds as well.
Thanks, Bill. One of the things I want to now dive into, and Emily, you just brought this up real briefly. What about the actual term itself, in terms of, you know, is RSS going to be something that the average person needs to know, or will it be relegated to, you know, POP, IMAP, HTTP? You know, we everybody knows that they go to a website, but nobody knows what powers it. Everybody gets their email, but they don't know or care whether it's, you know, POP or IMAP. Are we going to have the same thing with RSS? And right now, it's, you know, RSS versus Adam. RSS has kind of just become the term. We now use feeds, news feeds. What's going to happen there? Well, I want to ask the panel, because if you're going to be using this, especially for marketing, trying to justify to other groups within the company and trying to find different ways of using and distributing your content, do we have to worry about that? Do we have to worry about the terms? Is it not going to matter? You know, what do you guys think? Somebody like to answer that?
Yeah, I think that as, you know, some of the new browsers that are coming out integrate RSS reading capabilities into them, and other applications as well, that's going to change, and you won't need to know the term. The term is relevant now because we all have to go out and find some type of feed reader to begin with, you know, if you're interested in reading it at all. So I think once that becomes integrated into the tool sets that we have, we'll need the term far less.
You know, I don't think it's about RSS at all. I think it's about subscribing to content. And we're in the middle of a paradigm shift, really, I think, and that is, you know, back in the beginning, right, we had email, great communication mechanism. We all still use it today. Then we kind of evolved to the idea of using the web and search, and we would proactively go out and look for something. And that really, you know, for the second time, changed our lives, right? Email changed our lives. Search changed our lives. Now we're in the middle of this shift towards subscribing to content, right? And, you know, we don't go out and proactively look for stuff the same way anymore. It's actually coming to us based on the interests we've defined. And that's, I think, the next big paradigm shift. But RSS, I think RSS is just plumbing. And actually, I think last time I said that was in Austin, so there must be something in the water here. But I don't think it's going to matter, right? You know, nobody knows what SMTP is either, except people that write Thunderbird and, you know, Exchange or something like that, right? But no one has to care. Same with RSS.
Anybody else have any thoughts on that?
I would agree with that. It's a car part under the hood that makes car run, but...
We're also talking a lot right now just about people subscribing to feeds, yeah, right? Yeah. And measuring if it's mainstream or not based on subscriber information, right? But it's not just for subscribers anymore, right? It's for moving that data around from, you know, from site to site, right? You know, you look at all the page flakes and services like that out there that maybe there's a widget that sits on your site that's pulling in data and information, right? Video or text. So it is that plumbing behind the scenes. So how do we measure that, right? How do we measure the use of that information? And working with one of our clients, what got me really excited was they're redesigning this is a large publishing company, redesigning their entire website to break it up into chunks, all powered by RSS. So at any time, that one, the information can go into these chunks a lot easier. But they also realize the power of syndication. That wait a minute, these chunks don't have to live on our site, so people can take them and put them in their own environments and use them how they want. So that as they have like, I don't know, dozens of web properties, and they're slowly working through that process to XML enable their websites, which is pretty exciting to me, I think.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting in that RSS can almost be an API for mm-hmm. anybody's website, in that, you know, by adding RSS to your site and distributing your content, whether it's from a pure marketing perspective or, you know, just from a technical perspective, that you now have the ability to use this technology as a plumbing to be able to distribute and share your content with many other different applications or services. So I think that's a great point. One of the other things I want to start jumping into, and especially one of the things that I think now can frame a lot of the rest of the conversation here, is kind of the meat of the discussion. We're talking about using RSS for marketing. I think a lot of you are interested in maybe hearing and understanding what are some of these different ways and how are companies using RSS for marketing. I think we all understand the paradigm of, okay, I have a feed, I'm going to subscribe to it, and I'm going to get, you know, articles or blog posts, and we get that. What other things are companies using? What other types of applications and other ways of marketing are different companies and, you know, businesses using RSS for? And, you know, open it up. Anybody wants to start with that?
I'll jump in. One of my favorites for particularly for small businesses, it's a tremendous listening and research device. On the very simplest terms, you probably half of you have done this already. You can go to a Google News or a Yahoo News and set up as many custom searches as you want on the name of your company, on the name of products, on the name of industries, on the name of competitors. It doesn't really matter. You can set as many as you want, and they instantly create an RSS feed for you. You take that RSS feed and do lots of things with it. But what it really gives you is sort of real-time information about whatever your search is that changes every 10 to 12 minutes, or when some news site updates all of the places where they crawl and grab information. That's one of the easiest, most basic uses that can really be powerful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so
I'll go.
I don't think you even need to build an RSS feed or have one on your site to use RSS for marketing. So let me think about this in a little bit different way, right? You can still build a feed. I would definitely encourage you to do that. But also think about it in the sense that there's this big kind of cloud of content out there, right? And, you know, there used to be, you know, content on CNN and on USA Today and on, you know, Fox News or whatever, and you would go to their site to get it. But now all this content's available via RSS. We can access everybody's content the same way. There are databases out there that contain all this content, right? And you can use some of that, right? So if any of you are using a desktop aggregator, you're kind of, you know, tapping into that cloud of content and picking out just a little bit of stuff, right? Or if you're an enterprise, right, you might grab a big chunk of stuff, right, and distribute it to your users. But if you're just a, say you're a company that builds, you know, disk drives, right, you can grab a little bit of content out of this cloud, right, about disk drives. Because there's people talking about it all the time, and some of those people are pretty influential or may have, you know, opinions that are worthy to, you know, repeat to your customers. Take some of that stuff and put it on your website, right? And, you know, I mean, don't, like, try to steal somebody's content or something, right? Take, like, you know, some headlines or excerpts or something. You're still driving traffic back to the people that published it. But take some of this conversation and pull it into your site. And that's going to tend to build traffic to your site and have you seen as an expert in that area. And also, and if you're a disk drive manufacturer, that's always good. but it also kind of, you know, gets people to come to your site to find out, you know, what's going on in the world of disk drives, you know? So kind of be the people that sort of, in a sense, host that conversation about whatever's going on. And you don't have to publish anything to do that. You know, anybody can do that today.
Very interesting. Become a brand leader, a thought leader by leveraging that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to that point, if you look at what... Well, there's so much content being created every day, and not just by bloggers or traditional publishers, but marketing companies, right? Manufacturing companies. Ford, for example, is a great example. And what they're doing is they're creating websites for auto shows. So they did one for the Detroit Auto Show, and they're doing one for the New York Auto Show, and they're sending a person there to cover the show, and they're it's not just what's happening with Ford products, but what's happening in the industry. And I think that's pretty fascinating. And to Greg's point, you know, they're trying to create it's a blog, you know, to compete with other publishers in, you know, car enthusiast publishers or, you know, car and driver and such. So they're not relying anymore to get their piece on car and driver. They're creating the original content themselves. Now, what they're looking to do then is take that content and then syndicate that on other websites. And now they can be the official, expert on, you know, of course, Ford vehicles foremost, but as well as the show itself. And they obviously have the pocketbook to do that, but they understand the how important content is and leveraging the written word, if you will, to draw customers back, to build an affinity towards the Ford brand. So it's part of their overall marketing strategy.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, I mean, if you're a company or an individual, you know, small or large, one of the things you should definitely be doing is RSS for your news feeds. RSS is sort of PR, so company product updates, anything you want to get sort of direct and fast information out to your audience, that's a great way to do it. A lot of the companies that we work with will obviously have automatic product feed updates as well as news about the company, job listings, things that can really pull people in also like surveys, marketing surveys, those all that can go out in RSS as well.
Excellent.
You know, let me add one last thing too, something John said on a totally different note. You know, so he was talking about feeds you can create, right, that sort of monitor what people are saying about your company or your products or whatever. And, you know, I would take that to the level of if you're in a company and you're responsible in any way whatsoever for marketing or product strategy or any of this stuff, if you're not doing what he said, you're not doing your job, I don't think. It's irresponsible not to do it today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing to kind of take a look at there is when, you know, any aspect of marketing, any type of campaign you run, anything you do with marketing, you need to measure it. You know, one of the funny things about marketing as a discipline, as a concept, is that, you know, there are no hard answers sometimes. You have to... you know, implement your plan, implement your strategy. You think you know what you're doing, but you have to go out to market and you have to test that. And using RSS feeds for that purpose, one, you can do that with some of the tools and technologies for monitoring, tracking, you know, like Bill's company and Feedo, Feedburner, you know, and mine. But at the same time, once again, that what John mentioned and now Greg just mentioned as well, being able to use RSS for some of the less obvious purposes in terms of tracking your competition, you know, knowing what's happening, knowing instantaneously that your marketing campaign is working or not working. If somebody is writing about you or not writing about you, you can know that instantly. So I think that's an excellent point to bring up. I don't, John, did you have anything else to add to that kind of subject?
You know, I want to talk about using RSS to get better search results, but is that appropriate here, or are we going to talk about other uses?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, search engine optimization is an excellent point. Do you have any insight?
I have no clue how to do it. I just thought I'd throw it out.
Oh.
Actually, you know, I think that it's what we talked about, you know, obviously within the whole licensing of you know, publishing and syndicating content, is very easy for a company now who goes in several areas, serves several markets, has several products, to build and expand upon their website with deeper dives into content that can actually generate some tremendous search results, even if you're simply republishing an RSS feed using a JavaScript code or something where you're not really going to get the credit for the HTML that's in the dynamic content, but having themed pages with that are optimized otherwise, and then actually having great content that shows up there for eyeballs, it is very easy to do and to use RSS to do that. And again, just using our example of custom Google search results and then taking that RSS feed and republishing it so that you now have the latest industry or community news that's showing up on a page that's themed that way for your site can be a really powerful way to get some nice rankings and some nice, hopefully some nice traffic for some key search terms.
I don't. If anybody has any other comments on SEO, or I have a.
Oh yeah,
point.
I just want to say if, and also in terms of a technical approach to your site, if you do have your pages optimized with the feed in your meta tags, and you do use a feed service, obviously when people search in Google, your feed result will come up, you know, probably in the top two or three under your primary site. So as far as searching, and there are also a whole slew of products coming out that are focused entirely on searching through feeds. Whether that is textual data or it's podcasts and video data as well. So that's kind of going to be the next shift, is not just, you know, who's producing what. We're all producing feeds, but how are you going to find that specific feed that you're looking for? And in terms of Google, they're rapidly indexing all feeds already.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the companies that we work with, marketing companies, they do content for two reasons. One is to increase their search visibility, because they finally get the idea that, wow, okay, our 460 by 60 ads don't show up in Google, and we've spent all this money doing this beautiful creative, and hope I'm not offending any.
Not yet, but keep going.
Okay, so they realize, oh, well, wait a minute, if we create original content that is better, it's better indexed than our beautiful creative that we spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on in these beautiful flash websites. So that's the one reason is which is a huge reason, right? So their content can be found, so their brand can be found, and they look like an expert. It's not just marketing speak that they're doing. They're actually putting, you know, hiring people to write original content. And then the second way is to use that content in their advertising programs to syndicate that, to get it out to where the fringes, to the long tail, wherever their customer, potential customers or prospects may be living and reading.
Can I just say one more thing?
Yeah,
about just that too, is don't think about it. It doesn't have to go out to the world.
No.
I mean, you can repurpose a lot of that content on your own site, which would, for those of you who have multi-page sites, you know, repurposing headlines from your RSS feeds on different pages is first off very simple, but it's also a great way to pull people into mm-hmm. content that maybe hadn't found your blog yet.
Yeah, that's a great point, John. One of the things I've talked to clients about is you can actually use RSS and some of the RSS display technologies as a simple or very basic content management system. You know, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. You don't need to do some really fancy stuff. But there's a million tools out there right now that allow you to take any RSS feed and then display it either, you know, using a variety of ways. It's as simple as just a line of JavaScript.
you know, anywhere on your site, and then, you know, style that or customize it as need be. And like John just said, you can then take, redistribute, put especially your own content in different places and make that updated. So what it does is it kind of can, you know, level that playing field and allow anybody from the person that has a very basic static HTML site to start using RSS feeds for marketing, you know, the whole way up to the largest organization with the most expensive, you know, CMS. So, one of the things I want to make sure we talk about today is a lot of times we talk about, you know, what are the best practices. What I want to hear about, what have you guys been seeing in terms of what are publishers doing wrong? What are the mistakes that you're seeing when companies are trying to use RSS, and specifically, you know, RSS for marketing? Anybody want to jump on that one? Bill, I mean, no, you have a, I mean, you
no,
have
they're
a lot
doing
of,
everything right.
Do you have another question, please?
Yeah, six
questions.
You don't need to name names, but you deal with, you know, I'm sure what thousands of different of feeds and then the advertisers. Yeah. What are some of the things, you know, you don't have to name names, but what are some of the things that you're seeing they're doing wrong, or are they doing anything wrong? They got to be doing something wrong.
Yeah, no, one of the first when you asked that question, the first thing that popped in my mind was being too stingy with the information and the data, right? Writing a headline, and that's going to get, you know, think that that's going to work for them in their feed, right? And, you know, trying to figure, the first thing they should do is try to figure out what is the magic number of characters in their feed items, right? Headlines definitely don't work. You know, are their audience ready for full feed content, right? You know, you as users may want that, but is that really the best thing to do? And the data that we found was the difference between the response rate on full content feeds or summary feeds is marginal. Meaning when I say people coming back to your site. So you would think, right, you send out a full feed and people are, you know, are consuming that feed in their news reader, and they're not going to come back to your site if that's your objective, right? Well, that's not necessarily true. There's something inherent maybe in the way we think and interact with feeds that says, well, what else is back on that site? Or maybe I want to leave a comment about this particular post, or maybe I want to do more as an end user with this information so that people are going back to your site. And I would say just don't be too stingy with content. Look at it from a marketing perspective to increase response rates, get people back to your site, and branding.
So I have two things that I've seen. One is, you know, don't try to be all fancy. So if you have, like, you know, if there's five feeds that you want to have, right, and like your, you know, your marketing feed and your technical feed and, you know, three other things, right, that are sort of different topics, don't try to make like a fancy form that makes like a custom URL that's going to be this feed that has to be dynamically generated that contains just the stuff the user picked out. Just make five feeds. People will figure it out, and they'll subscribe to what they want. And the other thing we've seen, too, is if you want to, you know, secure your feeds, there's one way to secure your feeds that will work across the board, and that's HTTP authentication. I won't go into technical details, but don't try to be, you know, clever with, you know, secret URLs or something like that, because it doesn't work. I mean, systems like Google and Yahoo and NewsGator, we all index that stuff, right? And we don't know that you had a secret URL. So, but we will respect what you meant if the feeds require credentials and use well-known authentication mechanisms.
Very good point.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure that you all got the technical term in there. Don't try to be all fancy. Did everybody get that? Because, I mean, that's worth repeating. I totally agree. But one of the things I would say is that I even in this day and age, you know, having the little, everybody's seen the little square RSS, you know, feed chiclet, right? Everybody knows what that is, right? I mean, if you've got that up in your address bar because you've got it in your meta tag, then, well, everybody will know how to subscribe to your feed, won't they? Well, 90% of the people in here will, of course. But if you're after an audience that maybe is not as RSS savvy, it's still important, I think, to make it easy to subscribe to your feeds, to tell people how to do it. I think you can make a case for having, you know, push this button and hear a little audio clip about how to subscribe to this feed if you don't know how to do that. I think it's important as marketers to do that. If we want people to subscribe and to start learning how to get information that way, make it very easy. I you don't mind if we mention just the random site
type
of stuff here. I've been using for a while a little widget called Add This. Anybody familiar with that? Mm-hmm. You can get rid of all the hundreds of chicklets, you know, of all the ways people want to subscribe and put one little button, and it'll take them to a page that will then allow them to choose their reader. I mean, I think that type of tool still is – I mean, maybe it'll go away. But I think today if we're trying to encourage people to subscribe and learn how to use RSS, you know, let's be the ones to teach them too.
No, that's a great point, John, because if you can't find how to subscribe to a feed, how can you possibly expect to market your information to them? And, you know, I would just, you know, throw out there, be consistent. You want subscribers. An RSS feed subscriber is going to be much more valuable to you over the long run than an email subscriber would be. So make it prominent. Use auto-discovery. Show, you know, at the top of a page, above the fold, subscribe here. Don't make people have to search for it. Emily, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And also, if you do have metrics on comparable usage from your audience and what kind of feed readers they might be using, definitely have that particular service, you know, readily identified on your feed page, whether that's My Yahoo, NetVibes, whatever that is. NewsGator.
Good catch, Bill.
Sorry. FeedCraft. And then the other mistake I think I've seen where people kind of think RSS is this whole separate kind of strategy to your content strategy. And it's not. It's really a companion piece to what you're already doing. So if your content strategy has been to approach different audiences like we all have, whether that's new prospects, you know, your investors, the general public, whatever that might be, you want to make sure your feeds kind of match. Sorry, I'm transmitting. anyway, you just want to make sure that your feed strategy is aligned with your content strategy of your site and your audiences.
One more thing I'm going to add too is think about when you go to NewsGator or Bloglines, or any of your readers or even, you know, Firefox for that matter, and you see the lines of, you know, text. When a user is looking at that information, and it depends on reader habits, but they may open up all of their feeds in one long river of news, right, and see everything there from CNN to Fox to their favorite blog, right? So what's important, it all looks the same, right? All the same in text, and you know, depending on the reader you use, it's either blue for the headlines and then some sort of black or gray text. How does your information stand out amongst that river of news? So one little tip is to, for every article of yours, put your company name just like the AP does, right? So start off your article with your company name followed by your text. At least you have one small element of branding. As someone's looking down, it may catch their eye that it's your text. Plus, if it's being syndicated, that'll show up on wherever it's being syndicated as well, and knowing that it's your company.
You know, that reminded me of something else, and I was hoping we were going to get to disagree, but I guess not.
not this time.
Keep in mind, too, your content. So we'll go back to the technical term. Don't try to be all fancy with your formatting in your feed. So, yeah, you can have images and flow your text around them and stuff, but don't get too crazy, because remember that your content might be consumed on like a mobile device, or it might be consumed on a television screen or something like that. And, you know, whatever, you know, cool stuff you do in your formatting may not translate well to the devices it's actually being read on. And you don't actually control what it's being read on. So try to think about that.
Before we got a few minutes before we can really start jumping into all the questions.
There's a question back there.
Oh, there is? Wait. No, go ahead. Throw it out.
Is there a
Let me just repeat the question. It was basically what type of frequency of updating RSS content is maybe a best practice or you would recommend. Anybody want to take that on a panel? I'll just throw out one thing to kind of discuss this. What I recommend is it doesn't really matter as long as you're consistent. So it just like with blogging, in that if you're blogging on a daily basis, you need to keep blogging on a daily basis, or people are not going to be very happy about that. So I usually recommend at least consistency. But I'd like to hear what the other panel has to say. Are there any best practices as far as frequency?
I would agree with consistency. I think if you're a company and you're doing product updates, then definitely at least once a month. It's the same kind of translation as maybe an email newsletter in that context. I think if you're an individual or a blogger, for example, then it has to be much more frequent than that, but certainly matching, again, what your sort of content output is in general, and that's the key thing.
And it really always comes down to the question. Always comes down to goals. I mean, why do you have an RSS feed? I mean, what are you trying to get out of it? I mean, what are you trying to produce when producing content? I mean, that'll be the answer to the question. If one of the primary things you want to get is better search results because you're producing great content, write something every day. But obviously, that question, I think, has to be answered before you really can talk about frequency. That's like, what should the response be to my direct mail? Well,
I would worry about quality more than quantity, right? So if you've made this goal to post every day and you just don't have anything to say, well, don't make up something stupid just to have a post, right? Because you see actually a lot of feeds like that once a week they've just got this nugget and then they have garbage the rest of the time. And I would definitely not do that.
I would sort of disagree. Can we do that?
Yes,
please. I think that's a cop-out I don't have anything brilliant to say today, because I think you're trying to build an audience. I think that, and again, it comes down to your goals, but I really believe that, get one of these, okay? Every time a client asks you a question, every time you read something, just start putting notes in one of these, and I guarantee you, you'll have a backlog of brilliant things to write about. And I just think that I'm really not disagreeing with you as much as trying to not let you guys off the hook, about producing content. It's not that, I'm not going to curse. It's not that hard.
Okay. Question?
Recommend any tracking tools in terms of other than the standard website tracking, so you can track, everybody wants to know who, what, where, and what they did, and is there any specific RSS ones that we can be utilizing a little bit better than just a standard web tracking?
Absolutely. I know there's two kind of categories in that, you're going to have technology specific ones, and it's going to depend on how you're creating your feeds. But you can do that yourself in-house. There's a variety of different ways of doing that, but there are services that will take feeds and just give you that package of metrics like FeedBurner. But I don't know, Bill, I know you deal with that in terms of how your company deals with it, maybe more on an advertising side, but you definitely generate, when the feeds go through your system, generate a tremendous amount of...
Yeah, we're looking at lots of data. But we're approaching it from a marketing standpoint. So how well is your marketing initiative that's using your feed, right? Mm-hmm. So we look at it from that, where if you're, not that you can't use it as your traditional publisher, but if you're a marketer looking to understand how to leverage your feeds, what to do with your feeds, campaign specific or overall objective.
And what's really important about that is, and just so that the audience understands, you can actually dig down and get an even deeper understanding of your reader than you would via email, because you can not only track item clicks, you can track that view, you can track the URL clicks, and so then all the other host of statistics. So you can actually use this to any level of degree for tracking purposes.
Great. So to answer your question specifically, it depends on what you're looking to do and what your objective is. So there's FeedBurner. There's Simple Feed. FeedBurner is more general, overall publisher. They work with a lot of publishers, and there's Simple Feed that works more with the enterprise, and there's Tom's Company that work more in the middle market, and then there's Feedo that works with marketing companies. Okay. Did I miss anyone? Is that right?
Yeah.
To what Tom just said, though, you got to be really careful with the statistics that you get, right? Because, you know, a lot, for example, there was a report published recently where, you know, it was talking about, you know, article views and click-throughs and things like that. And that really depends on what kind of device and what kind of application is being used to read this content, right? Not all applications will retrieve, like, a little HTML thing that's being used for tracking. Not all applications can retrieve that, but you might be using it offline, you know. There may be certain applications that encourage you to click through versus certain ones that don't. So, you know, don't accept the data you get from these services as gospel. Really try to understand how it's measured and how the application design affects that.
It's more of a guideline, really.
Yeah. Well, because then you have to look at your stats. You know, what are the reader stats? You know, is it NewsGator, Bloglines, Firefox, and then make some determination on the size of your feed, right? We all want to know what the size of our feed is, and how do you measure that, right? Is it impressions? Is it views? Is it clicks? Is it subscribers? So it's a guideline.
I wanted to ask again about the best way to get to allow your user base to add your RSS feeds, because my website has a high volume, high affinity. We have a high affinity fan base. We have a couple million users each month. However, not everyone's that tech savvy. So what I struggle with, okay, is do you use the Orange RSS chicklet or did you add a feed? Because now you were calling RSS plumbing, but it really isn't plumbing if you're saying RSS. It's like email. You don't see SMTP icons everywhere. You say email. So do you go, if you're calling it RSS and you go with the standard, it's not really plumbing. It's going to be a term that we're banking on people to associate. Or do we go with add a feed, but if that doesn't get a wide adoption, are we stuck with then add my AOL, add my Google, add my MSN? So what I struggle with is if you have the built-in fan base and you're getting, you know, when you're getting in the millions each month and not, you know, that the high percentage are not that technical, then how do you really make it easy to use? Because I see a lot of contradiction in a couple of things here that we're saying. You know, because again, if we position as plumbing, you can't really position as the icon.
I was going to say, you know, first let's start with Emily here, because I know that you're heavily involved in doing a lot of design with client sites. One thing I would just throw out initially is that if you do have a large targeted group, you know how to speak to them. So there is definitely going to be not a lot of best practices for your particular group, but you know what they might want to hear. So you have to maybe take a little bit more of an effort of putting together a page or a section that kind of explains this and why it's beneficial to them. But, you know, Emily, what have you been seeing?
Yeah, I think you also want to customize the language to the type of language and tone that you've already used on your site. So if you're a recipe site, you wouldn't say, you know, download RSS or subscribe to RSS, you might say instead, you know, get a daily recipe in your, I'm just making this up, obviously, but you'd want to change the language, basically, to address
the
type of
audience.
But I
guess my point is, if the RSS icons can be standard, then it's really can't position as plumbing. It really then is you're taking language to associate adoption of that icon to educate your fan base, not only for your own site, but for other sites. So the question I really am asking is that the direction that we should be heading? And in that case, it's not really positioning as plumbing, but more as a new adoption, or do we then generalize as add a feed?
Yeah. I think when we were talking about plumbing, I think we were probably talking more about the way that you all should think about it in terms of using it. But when it comes to actually asking somebody to subscribe to it, then no, it's not necessarily plumbing. And I think I would agree with Emily. What does your fan base want to do? I mean, I love the widget add this because it allows them to click on one button, and get a whole bunch of different options. I think that a lot of us should still in this day and age, have the ability for people to subscribe to our feeds via email, via a tool they already use, you know, every single day. And you know, those tools are out there. A number of services offer that ability. So I don't think we're talking about plumbing that you should just tell the customer it's
just
plumbing.
Goes, yeah. There was a point that you associate with SMTP. I mean, I don't see us positioning at SMTP now. I mean, you know,
Right. So I disagree with almost two-thirds of that. So, interestingly enough, right, you see a website with an orange XML button and then like an add to NewsGator, add to Yahoo, add to Google buttons on there and stuff. The one button of the, and assume your site supports auto-discovery of RSS, the one button no one's ever going to click because they don't have to is the orange XML button. Any aggregator that, you know, can basically respond to something interesting that happens when you click that orange XML button supports auto-discovery. So actually, that's the one you don't need. And if it supports auto-discovery, typically in the toolbar, something's going to light up. The user's going to know he can subscribe. Nobody has to know anything about RSS. The other thing I would do for now, though, is there are major big aggregators that don't support auto-discovery, right, because they're websites, right? So Google, Yahoo, NewsGator Online, for example. So what I would do is figure out which ones you think are the big ones, and those three are the ones I would start with, and leave those chicklets on your site. And it's kind of a pain, right, because there's three big buttons. Luckily, they're all more or less the same size. But I would leave those on there and support auto-discovery. And, you know, you're back to plumbing. Nobody has to know anything about RSS.
Well, who knows what auto-discovery is? So that's part of the problem.
You don't have to know what auto-discovery is. Because
well, of course,
you don't
have to know, but the people don't know.
No.
If you don't know what the orange button is in the toolbar, then you're not going to be able to benefit from
auto-discovery. How many in this audience don't know what auto-discovery is?
It doesn't matter.
Well, if the
if the orange button in the toolbar lights up, people will learn that that's how you can subscribe to stuff. Right.
Yeah, I think though, to his point, if you have a fan base and they came to your site and they saw an orange button, they saw a purple cow, they still wouldn't know what to do with it. So I think you want to do your first outreach through the normal communication channel, which is probably through email, right? So new feature, you know, get news from this site quickly delivered to you by not going to the site. You know, that might catch somebody's attention more than actually approaching the site. The orange RSS icon that was developed was really developed to try to save the pain of having 20 chicklets. But clearly, it's just this interim solution that, you know, mainstream audiences will never know what it is. It's just this orange button. And I think it was really more for early adopters to try to push this idea that if you do see this thing and you might know what it is, click on it. But there's certainly ways around that by kind of pulling up what your feed content is into a sidebar of a site, for example, and then right under that having a link, you know, get this in your own news reader right away. I think there are other approaches in UI and normal marketing that can get those messages across.
But the direct marketer in me is saying test, right? Mm-hmm. We're testing with a few clients now. They originally had a black website with a red RSS button. I'm like, well, and then they were wondering why they didn't get subscribers. And I said, well, how about we change? And I'm not a web designer by any means, but how about we just move to an orange button, take a first step, right? So anyway, the idea is, if you're from a marketing perspective, it's test, right? And you know, in a few months when we're done with our testing on red versus orange versus just the word subscribe with the icon. We're going through a bunch of those tests to figure out what is the best way. And we're looking at it from a conversion standpoint. When it's orange with the letters subscribe next to it, we get a lift of X. So stay tuned.
I think we'll move on. We could be honest. The summary point is that there's no magic bullet yet. And so, you know, test is probably the best thing. Next question.
Oh, I'm curious about your thoughts on if your content has a lot of video. Your answer may be similar to the banner ad thing, but would you recommend, say you have a 1 minute spot or a 30-second spot, would you recommend having, say, for example, a transcript of the text that's in it or some sort of descriptors if it's largely image, saying, you know, these are the images that are in it, associated with your video, but maybe not necessarily seen on the site? And so how would you sort of optimize video content in your RSS feed? And then a secondary question to that is, do you see Flash video as the standard for video content right now?
Where to start?
Yeah, anybody want to take that?
Well, I'm going to take the first part, and I'm hoping, Greg, from an aggregator point of view, you can talk about enclosures, right, enclosing that video content. But I'm a big fan of, if you are doing video, is to always have a great description. You don't necessarily have to transcript every word, but definitely have a description because it's going to be found, right? That can be indexed quicker, better, faster, right? And if you're syndicating that, and I see that you do have a video in your feed, I know what the aboutness is. You're saving me time as the consumer, right? I see your text. You have a video. That is something I'm interested in. Great, I'll watch it. That's just, again, from a marketing standpoint and how it might be indexed in search engines.
Yeah, as far as formats, too, I mean, you know, Flash video is obviously very popular with YouTube video and things like that. Other video formats that you think are common on your users' desktops, I wouldn't hesitate to use those either. You know, and you can also put video inside an enclosure tag, which means it's sort of this attachment thing, or like an embedded player, like a YouTube player. And most aggregators will play embedded video from certain trusted sources, like YouTube, for example. embarrassingly enough, NewsGator Online won't right now, but it will like next week. The best thing to do is just try some things and, you know, see how it works. Go try all the aggregators that you think your users are using and see what the experience is like.
And it's really going to depend on how they want to consume that, because you're going to need to make a decision. Do I want my video to be, you know, read via podcast? Do I want it to be a little bit more portable, or do I expect my users to be reading that within the reader, and then, you know, Flash might be perfectly acceptable. So.
And Greg just had a great morsel of information that needs to be repeated there. If you have feeds on your site and you're using them, for marketing, or just for if you're a content producer, make sure you see how they render in every news aggregator that, you know, not everyone because there's hundreds, but the top ones, right? The top news aggregators, because they are a different look. And your marketing team and your creative team is saying, hey, let's put the shiny little widget in the feed, and it's great because, you know, it's marketing, and it's going to attract more people if we put this little shiny little object in the feed. Well, make sure that when you do a lot of testing of how that's going to be rendered. That's pretty important.
I think we have time for maybe to get to one last question.
Okay. I've got a question and a couple of comments. Personal experience. The question, actually, from what you said, I noticed that, you know, in syndication, for example, I use a Blogburst, when it gets picked up by different sites, sometimes it looks really funny the way the thing appears. I guess I'm going to take the topic with them when I see them in person, yeah. And my observation are, I think content and plugging and all that, it's kind of, when we talk about the average user, it kind of turned me off. You know, I would like to talk about stories and people show their personality and so on, you know, identity and stuff. I think it's too, maybe because I'm not a tech person, I'm just a self-taught person. So I think about stories and I write stuff that I think sometimes people like it, sometimes they don't, no big deal, you know. I think it, getting too much into technical stuff, maybe this is a waste of time. As far as seeing where your readers come from, I mean, personally, I use FeedBurner, and I use the stats, they put with the companies they bought, I forgot which one, for the page view and visitors. I noticed that, you know, we tend to be U.S.-centric. I mean, coming from Europe, I've got a different perspective. But in the morning, I noticed that, I mean, U.S. time, that you get a lot more readers from abroad. And then during the day, it kind of changes. So, and certain topics too, in certain, outlets that you can use, like Now Public and stuff, get a certain audience, different outlets where you can repurpose your content, get different audiences. So sometimes, you know, you can get your audience from different places. I mean, that was my personal observation. If you have some feedback on that, suggestions, I would take them.
We found that Tuesday is a pretty active day for readers of feeds, impressions and clicks on content spike on Tuesday. And I forget maybe followed by Wednesday, and it just tapers off from there. But so if you're looking to produce information, I mean, that's the stuff we studied when we were looking at, you know, doing emails, right? What's the most active day to send out an email, or the best day? And that, again, that's a general overview of all the different categories. What we're definitely finding, though, is every vertical is a little bit different. So the auto vertical versus the tech vertical versus, you know, entertainment, they all have different reading patterns. So when I say Tuesday, that's kind of the general. You just need to look at your own data to find that.
Is it true for the U.S. and abroad as well, or it's general? I mean, do you have different views?
Yeah, we just look
in Europe and Asia and whatever.
No, not yet. No.
Okay,
yeah, that's a good point.
Okay. We can we'll be here for a few minutes. We can carry on this conversation. So, thank you, everybody. I just want to also announce that one of our panelists will be doing a book signing today, John Jantz. So, if you'd like to talk with him more, but thank you, everybody, so much for coming.
Book signing, John.